From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. House Democrats have introduced an ambitious new immigration bill that encompasses President Joe Biden's plan to offer an 8-year pathway to citizenship for an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants. The bill is expected to face stiff resistance among Republicans who have embraced the Trump administration's anti-immigrant posture wholesale. Meanwhile, a new report released by the Oakland Institute on conditions facing guest farm workers in the U.S. expose horrific conditions akin to slavery. While Trump, during the pandemic, placed harsh limits on legal pathways to emigrate to the United States, he expanded the program, allowing temporary agricultural workers to enter. Joining me now is Anuradha Mittal. She is the executive director of the Oakland Institute, and David Bacon, author of the new report, Dignity or Exploitation? What Future for Farm Worker Families in the United States? He's a longtime immigration and labor reporter and photojournalist. Welcome to the program, Anuradha and David.
Pleasure to be with you, Sonali.
Thank you, Sonali.
So, David, let me start with you. Your report, I understand, is the culmination of years of work in documenting farm workers. There are, of course, undocumented immigrants, and then there are people who are allowed to come into the U.S. on visas. And then there's the separate category of temporary agricultural workers that come under this visa called the H-2A visa, to get really technical. I understand that this is the category that your report specifically focuses on?
That's right, Sonali. This looks at the conditions for those workers themselves. Last year, there were about 250,000 people who were brought by growers to the United States under that visa program. That's about a tenth of the total farm workforce in this country. And so the report looks at what the conditions are for those workers, which, as you said, have been called close to slavery, and also at what the impact of the growth of this program has been on farm workers who are already living here. The farm workers who are here in the United States are also themselves almost entirely immigrants. So this is really a situation in which this program is being used by growers to kind of pit one group of immigrant farm workers against another in order to essentially keep wages low and to maintain a very vulnerable workforce. And this goes all the way back to the old Bracero program. Listeners might remember that the U.S. had a program like this from 1942 to 1964 that was abolished at the height of the Civil Rights Movement when we won a different kind of immigration policy called the Family Preference System or Family Reunification. And today, the Biden administration is facing the same kind of decision and choice, and that is whether to maintain this program, this exploitative program for farm workers, or whether to do what the civil rights movement advocated, which was to put in its place an immigration system that benefited families and communities.
Anuradha, let's talk about that aspect of it. So last year, when the Trump administration expanded these visas for temporary agricultural workers, it did that at the same time that it severely restricted, I mean, to the point where it's effectively shut down now, any legal way for people to emigrate to the United States. He signed a number of presidential proclamations under cover of the pandemic and claimed that it would be a threat to the already tenuous labor market in the United States for non-Americans to be allowed to emigrate to the U.S. And yet he then expanded this program doing precisely that, you know, bringing in foreign workers, right?
Right, Sonali. I mean, I think last year when we saw the number of proclamations signed by Trump without any congressional input, and especially around immigration, as David has pointed out, and this report points out, this has been an act of that has nothing to do with saving jobs in the United States. It has nothing to do with dealing with the pandemic. But this is really about punishing in a very racist way people who are contributing to the economy of this country, people who are actually feeding this nation. So on one hand, extending all kind of bans on immigration. For instance, the green card backlog that we already have, you know, over 1 million people are waiting, 68% of which are actually Indian nationals, for instance.
My parents among them, just to disclose to the audience and you, my parents caught up in the green card backlog waiting to move here. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and it is terrible, which is really, as this report points out, whether it is green card, H-1B visas, or whether it is the farm workers, the intent to extract from these communities, take selfishly, whereas to separate families is just immoral and indecent.
So, David, let's talk about the details of what you found through your research in this and wrote about in this report, Dignity or Exploitation. And I should say, as you're a photojournalist, your incredible photos, beautiful black and white photos of the very people that you profile, whose conditions you expose, are peppered throughout the report. Why are the conditions so harsh that you say that they're similar to, you know, or they could be seen as close to slavery? And that's a very serious charge.
Well, it's because, Sonali, that the way in which this visa system operates makes workers extremely vulnerable. So in the report, for instance, we talk about a number of situations in Washington State where the workers who were brought in with this visa did protest over things that are so common. They're not just endemic, they are the way this program works. For instance, wage theft and pressure to work fast. You know, this visa program permits growers to require production quotas and to force workers to work very rapidly. The program also permits things that would be illegal otherwise. Growers are able to recruit only men, for instance, and only young men. In other words, no women, no people, older people, because what they want are people who can work fast. That would be illegal if they did it for people who they're hiring here. But the program permits this. And so when workers protest against that, growers are also permitted to fire them. And when you get fired as an H-2A worker, you lose your visa. So you become deportable right away. And in fact, that's what happens to people when they do protests, is that they do get deported. But it doesn't stop there, because the program also permits growers to maintain blacklists. In other words, lists of people who they will not rehire for another season. You know, farm work is seasonal work. And so workers who come one year also want to be able to come the next year. And so by maintaining these lists of people who they will not hire, it's sort of like another form of threat that they can use. And that has very severe consequences for the other workers around them, people who are already living here. Because, for instance, the report describes a situation in which one grower here in California had a crew of young men, H-2A workers, working very, very quickly. And then their old crew of people that they used to hire, that the grower used to hire in the past, working right next to them, and said to the workers who were sort of the historical workers there, said, if you can't keep up with these young people here, we're going to replace you. So this kind of competition exerts a really big pressure on keeping conditions low, and the same thing holds true for wages. If workers who are already here say they want a wage increase or they want to organize a union, it's easy for the growers to replace them. And even though that's not supposed to happen, the program could not have grown from 10,000 workers in 1992 to 250,000 workers last year if growers were not replacing people who are already here with the workers who are there bringing under this program.
Anuradha, what could the Biden administration do without going through Congress to address some of these concerns, not just with the H-2A visa program that is, as David pointed out, is exploitative, but also the green card bans? If Trump was able to wreak so much havoc through executive action alone, and if the Republicans, which have already indicated, are unlikely to support Biden's comprehensive immigration reform bill, can Biden not undo Trump's damage through counter-executive action?
That's a great question, Sonali. I think that's a lesson that we can learn from. Where there's a political will, there is a way. So for Biden administration to ensure that there's dignity for all immigrants, for all workers, some executive action is very necessary. We saw at the start, as soon as he came into the office, whether it is stopping the construction of the wall to ending the ban, the Muslim ban. So there are many such things that can be done, you know, the things that were in place around the Dreamers. And one thing we have to really focus on, building on what David just said, it's not just that the workers, when you look at the report, and I read about Ernesto Silva, who died picking blueberries because he had no choice despite the the smoke, the heavy wildfire smoke. He died from that. I think these are the questions that the Biden administration has to face. Is this going to be United States of America, which is decent? We're not even talking about being kind. We're talking about basic human rights. And to talk about that negotiations with the Republicans, these are basic American values and executive actions based on and proclamations which can bring back some dignity, which can bring back some decency to this country, is going to be very important.
You mentioned that the Muslim ban it was one of the things that Biden overturned, but if there's still a green card ban in place and other visa bans in place, it's not as though, you know, it's basically just means that there's a wider net cast. And also we understand that ICE and DHS is still deporting people in the same way that they were deporting under right. Trump, even though Biden has said that he wants to stop that. So, you know, he has refused to overturn the green card bans. They do expire on March 31st. And when asked about it, his press secretary, Jen Psaki, basically implied that, well, we can't very well issue travel bans to thwart the coronavirus spread while then lifting bans on green cards. As if to say that those are all one and the same thing. And certainly there are ways in which people can safely come in via testing, et cetera, because there is still international travel going on. So it's really interesting to see the Biden administration pay lip service to right. taking a strong stand on immigration. But in practical terms, not much has changed yet so far. David?
Well, first, as you point out, Sonali, he has to get control over the rogue agency of the government, you know, ICE and the Department of Homeland Security. And I think that's going to take some very determined effort on his part to do it. As Anuradha is saying, there needs to be political will. Certainly by not revoking Trump's ban on processing green card applications, you know, that basically continues freezing the program. What we need is the opposite, and that is within his power to do. He can tell the consulates of the U.S. all around the world to start processing family applications again so that your parents and other people like them can use the system which we fought for. That's a system that we fought for and we won in the civil rights movement. And at the same time, I think there needs to be a very, very close monitoring of that program that exists, and also starting to lower the boom, especially on those contractors and those recruiters who are guilty of these violations. And, you know, last year, there were only 0.03% of all of those contractors were punished for any of those violations. So there really is no enforcement of the law. So at the very bare minimum, the laws need to be enforced. But in the end, also, I think the Biden administration has to choose which one it wants. Does it want family preference system? Does it want family reunification? Or does it want to give growers a cheap labor force? And I think that the direction is something we have to fight for. We have to fight to make sure that the Biden administration does what is good for communities of people here and not just simply a profit center for rich growers.
Let's talk about the way in which this current H-2A visa program, especially as it's been expanded and you know, rules not properly being enforced, is also sort of perpetuating this notion here in the United States that in the troubled economy, the only jobs that are available are these extremely poorly paid jobs. I mean, one of the things that the United States could do, of course, is adopt a federal minimum wage that's much higher, that would apply to foreign workers. We live at a time when billionaires are turning into trillionaires, when our collective wealth is being sucked from the bottom to the very top. And ultimately, this is an issue of exploitation, right? There is a class warfare being waged by the 1%ers against the rest of us. And immigration is in many ways at the heart of this warfare, right?
Well, totally, Sonali. I mean, you've said it. One of the things I would also add to that is that we need to understand that when people are leaving to come to the United States, why are people leaving? It is very much the same policies that have created and sucked the wealth at the top, which is devastating economies. We are talking about folks who used to be family farmers who are now turning into farm labor, who are forced to come to this country with racism and xenophobic laws. So what forces? Let's talk about the green card, even the backlog that we were talking about. A country like India, which is running the Silicon Valley, and yet you try to separate the families, but we don't focus on the brain drain, for instance, that is happening in a country like India. So the engineers and others who go through public institutions in India are just taken out, extracted to be used, and not to be even given the decency of the families being able to be together. I mean, right now, the fear is of the children of these Indians who are growing up in the United States will age out from the green card queue, for instance.
I want to get back to the report, David, that you authored, and this sense that there is this whole industry based around the importing of foreign workers. It's not just the growers in states like California that are bringing workers en masse in these exploitative conditions. There are contractors, you point out in your report, that are advertising their services to build housing for these workers. And the housing is terrifyingly inadequate. Give me a sense of what that industry is like, and how, especially during the past year, there's been very little attention paid to safety requirements and conditions during a pandemic, when we're all being told to socially distance, but some of these farm workers are living in conditions where they simply can't do that. Similar to incarcerated people.
Well, Sonali, the report, for instance, talks about a big apple grower in central Washington called Gebers Farms. About 8 or 9 years ago, Gebers Farms had what was called a silent raid, where the federal government came in and checked the papers of the people who were working there in the fields, and forced Gebers to fire 500 workers, almost its entire workforce, and then bring in H-2A workers to replace them. So this was the government basically, in a very formal way, substituting H-2A workers for the existing workers who were there. But this year, those workers paid a very terrible price for what had happened, because Gebers, like the other growers in Washington, has been building barracks, what's called congregate housing, in which workers sleep, for instance, 4 people to a room in bunk beds. So it's not possible for those workers to separate themselves that 6 feet distance. And so as a result of that, workers began to get sick at Gebers. One worker complained that you could hear coughing in the trees, in the orchards where they were picking. And then 2 workers died of the COVID infection because of that congregate housing. And one indication of the kind of political power that the growers and the contractors have in Washington is that the state of Washington issued a regulation that said that growers were permitted, actually, to maintain this kind of congregate housing, 4 people to a room in bunk beds, that epidemiologists at the University of Washington said would lead to the infections and deaths of people. And in fact, that's exactly what did happen. So the system of hiring that you're asking about, Sonali, you know, during the Bracero program, actually, this is something that's really worse than what happened during the Bracero program. The Bracero program was an agreement between the U.S. and Mexico, and it was very abusive in the way that the workers were treated. But the recruitment and the hiring of people was done essentially by the government. The government of Mexico recruited people in Mexico, and then the hiring system here in the U.S. was done in a sort of quasi-governmental way. That's all been privatized now. So we have, for instance, the Washington Farm Labor Association that brought 6,000 workers into the state of Washington last year. It's a private money-making entity, and they make money by increasing the number of workers and also decreasing the wages as much as possible. They lobbied the state of Washington to remove the wage requirement on piece rate for picking apples, which resulted in a $6 an hour wage cut for those workers, which, you know, again, it shows you what the power of these contractors are. And there are many contractors like them. The hiring agency in Mexico, a company that's called CSI, a U.S. company, not a Mexican company, a U.S. company, said that they brought in 25,000 workers last year. They recruited 25,000 workers. We don't even know who all of the recruiters and all the contracting companies are, because there is essentially no regulation of this at all. And I'm not proposing that the solution to things is to regulate them. I'm just showing how kind of disastrous this whole privatized system has become for workers.
And these are workers who have been brought here into the United States in order to pick the produce that we rely on, right, that we eat, that we, you know, during the height of the early months of the pandemic, there were empty grocery store shelves. Right now in Texas, we're seeing the same phenomenon in an uncertain world plagued by pestilence and climate change. We're bringing in labor that we can exploit so that Americans can remain fed. And I'm wondering, Anuradha, if you think that there is just this huge disconnect here in the United States about just how dependent Americans are on immigrant labor for our most basic necessities.
Yes, Sonali, and that was the point I was trying to make earlier, which is that we need the farm workers. These are the essential workers that were identified. They are the ones who have ensured that there's food on a table, that the shelves, you know, the grocery stores, that they still have vegetables and the produce. And to be mistreating at the level that David just described, the kind of inhumane treatment and human rights violations, just so that the contractors and the agribusiness can profiteer, it is, you know, it is just incredibly shameful. And that is why we need to be looking at it, as Biden administration talks about, you know, the immigration reform, how that is to be done that actually ensures and recognizes and respects the workers that make the economy of this country work, that feed this nation with their hands.
Well, where can people find out more about the report, David? And also, what are some steps that you outline very briefly in terms of what needs to happen now, very specific to the issue of the H-2A visa program? I'm assuming you're calling on the Biden administration to either begin enforcing the labor laws and ensuring there's no exploitation, or just simply going back to the pre-2020 levels of visa holders?
I think the long-term solution is to abolish the H-2A program. And if growers need labor, then they can raise the wages to the point where people want to go and take those jobs. I mean, we have an entire workforce of 2.5 million people in this country that's working basically at minimum wage, very often below that. So the wages have to go up. And the H-2A program keeps a lid on that, and we need to get rid of it, basically. And at the same time, we also need to make the immigration system that has functioned in the interests of families and communities function, get rid of those backlogs, you know, process the visas, allow people to come, let people, you know, unify their families here. Those are the basic solutions that I think are required. And to get the report, I think that you have to go up to the Oakland Institute website and click on the button that allows you to download the report, and you can download it and read it.
Yeah, it's available on the homepage itself.
And that's at oaklandinstitute.org?
That's correct.
That's oaklandinstitute.org. The name of the report is Dignity or Exploitation? What Future for Farm Worker Families in the United States? I want to thank the two of you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guests have been Anuradha Mittal, Executive Director of the Oakland Institute, which published the report that David Bacon, my other guest, wrote. David is a longtime immigration and labor reporter and photojournalist. And we've been discussing not just the report, but some of the other immigration-related issues in front of the Biden administration, including the new immigration bill that was just introduced into the House. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.